Up the floor comes Teague, gathering speed right down the middle of the lane, and he finishes with authority.
Welcome back. This is the Sideline Guys podcast. I'm Pat Boylan, Pacers radio host and sideline reporter. As always, Jeremiah Johnson, Pacers TV host and sideline reporter. This is an easier show than last week. We were coming off a bad loss, and, you know, we kind of had to pick up the pieces from it, evaluate it still early in the season, and it is just one game. It still is very early in the season. Orlando was on a back-to-back. They aren't going to be a good offensive team this year, but probably the best complete performance we've seen from Indiana, and that includes just 88 points offensively, lower than they'd usually been, but a dominating win over Orlando on Monday night when Frank Vogel was here.
19-point victory that really, if the Pacers shoot 45%, which is maybe about average, I'm not sure exactly their percentages on the season, that could be 30-point margin. So the Pacers did what they needed to do, but I think it was interesting that Frank Vogel comes back and you see a game that felt like a Frank Vogel type of game, a little bit of a slugfest. It wasn't beautiful basketball, a lot of missed shots. Some of the early offensive rebounds from the Magic I felt like were just because their shots were so off that a Pacer could be in position, but it bounced, you know, quickly down or to the side or even an air ball, and they were able to corral some of those. But I thought in the second half, really good energy from Kevin Seraph, and he sort of got this crowd fired up. Early in the third quarter, I was just kind of thinking – the end of the Celtics game on Saturday, and then for the second and early part of the third quarter last night, there just hadn't been a lot of juice in the building, and the fans were just waiting for something to cheer about. That game against the Celtics was close down the stretch, and with 2 minutes to play, it just didn't feel like it. So I really, as much as anything, liked that direction. I liked that enthusiasm. I liked the way a day later people are feeling about that win. And what I saw in practice today were guys that were smiling and having fun. And I hadn't seen that a lot over the first 3 weeks either. So all in all, a positive performance on Monday.
That was the most positive post-game locker room that I have seen this year. And remember, they had a good win on opening night against Dallas, and an exciting win, no doubt. And they've only lost one time here. So they've had a lot of wins in this building this season already. But that was the most positive that locker room has been. A couple numbers that stuck out to me, and one was talked a lot about on the television broadcast. If viewers watched that last night, again, we taped these on Tuesday. The least amount of points the Pacers have given up since January of 2014. So that would have been the back half of that Eastern Conference Finals season. That was before Paul George broke his leg. And then another thing that stuck out to me, the Pacers had three quarters where they held Orlando under 20 points. And in the first 10 games, they had two total quarters where they held the opponent under 20 points. So, yeah, it's Orlando. It's a team that's probably going to struggle offensively. Frank Vogel will have them stout defensively, and we saw that. But the Pacers were very strong on their own defensive end. You don't give up 69 points without a strong defensive effort. And I just, as I woke up this morning and tried to put last night into whatever context it needs to be put into, one of the original thoughts that kind of popped into my head was, what would the irony be if a win over Frank Vogel, your old coach, is ultimately what kind of got this team on track into the new era? And it's way too early, I think, to say that that's going to happen or this game's going to springboard them. But if the Pacers go on and play really well for the rest of the year, they have a strong, you know, here end of November, the irony of kind of needing to beat your old coach to move forward, I think, stuck out to me.
Some familiarity to a style that reminds Paul George specifically, because he's the one real tie to the significant success from Frank Vogel. Obviously, C.J. Miles, Monte Ellis, Rodney Stuckey, they played for Frank and Miles Turner last year. But Paul George was the guy that was here when Frank was having so much success. And I think it was a game that it was important for Paul George to play in. I always thought he was going to play in the game after listening to him talk after shoot-around on Monday. There wasn't much doubt in my mind that he was going to play, but he was still questionable leading up to game time. And you could tell he was lacking a little bit in lift, but it was important for him to play. And I think early in the season, it was important for maybe him to kind of get this team to slow down just a little bit. And, you know, you have to understand, I think that what Nate McMillan and Larry Bird are trying to do is a really good idea to push the tempo and to score more points. But you also have to have the guys familiar, and you got to maybe go a little bit gradual to that style. And I thought Paul George looked comfortable last night. He started to look more comfortable with a few more plays diagrammed and executed out of half court sets. And you're right. I think they got back to playing a little bit like what they're used to, but some of their best plays were pushing in transition and having some great ball movement. There were a couple of plays where 5 and 6 passes on a fast break led to an open shot or layup, and I thought that was kind of the perfect mix of what you want. Nate McMillan wants them to push when the opportunity is there. If not, let's slow down and set up, because the quick four shots that are questionable shots are leading to plays the other way. So all in all, a good performance. Good to see Frank. I thought it was fun talking with him before the game. I thought he did it the right way. You knew he would. I thought it was great. He walks out to the curtain, looked around, said, "How's everybody doing?" Just like he always would do when he would walk out of the Pacers locker room. And then after he answered all of those questions, he came into our interview room, and we talked briefly, and he was kind enough to sit down for 2 minutes, 3 minutes with us for the Pacers Live pregame. And one of the things I said to him was, a couple games ago, I accidentally said Frank Vogel coming up next in our coach's interview, and it was just clearly out of habit. I've only done it once this season. He said, "Yeah, well, what about me?" During the preseason, 3 different times, I called guys together to wrap up a practice or get in a huddle, and I said, "All right, guys, hands together, Pacers on 3. And he said his guys really let him have it for that. Yeah. Old habits die hard. And he said he thought when he left the interview room, he thought he might go right and walk towards the Pacers locker room, because he did that 82 times last year. Every game he sat down with us during the regular season that we broadcast. So it was great to see him. To see him in the building. But then I saw him exit stage left quickly after that game. I think Paul and some guys were going down to handshake and give him a little bit of a hug after the game. He wanted no part of that after that ended.
Yeah, no, and his team played, you know, pretty poorly. You don't score 70 points. That's problematic, and certainly Frank Vogel disappointed. They were on a back-to-back, I think, that showed. But they played really well in Oklahoma City the night before, and Chris Denari had the stat. They scored 50 less points last night, so certainly not the switch that he wanted. But for the Pacers, you know, it was odd kind of seeing him on that other sideline, and that's the first time that I've, you know, been a part of a coaching change, watching a guy that you've broadcast and been a part of, you know, the overall team's picture, and then all of a sudden you see him on the other sideline, so that was kind of odd. But at the same point, it almost felt appropriate, because now you're watching a team with Jeff Teague and Thad Young and playing a different style, and it didn't really feels kind of like a chapter has been turned, a page has been turned. And while it was odd seeing Frank over there, and it was certainly great to see him back and smiling, and certainly he soaked up that moment, which is good to see. Sometimes I think you see coaches and players try to not get distracted by it so much that they try to become a brick wall to it, and that's not natural. That's not emotional. If you were in a place for 6 years like he was and had a lot of good moments here, naturally you should come back, and that should be a positive thing. And I was glad to see him embrace that, some of the players embrace that. You know, ultimately he did a lot of good things here, and then it was time to move on, and I think he can respect that. I think the Pacers can respect that, but ultimately I enjoyed seeing him back here. But it did have a feeling of, despite the fact that that was a very Frank Vogel first half that you pointed out, this is a new chapter. There's a new page been turned, and it's Frank in Orlando. It's Nate here. It's a faster style of basketball. You mentioned the pace of play. I noticed going into that game, the Pacers were second in the league in pace of play, and I actually kind of cognizantly had the thought, I know they want to play faster. Do they want to play this fast? Not in a questioning perspective, but I wonder, do they really want to be second, one spot behind Phoenix, faster than anybody was last year? And I think you keyed in on it a little bit. They wanted to be faster than mid-pack like they were last year, or bottom pack like they were in previous years. But Nate has never really given me the feel that they want to, like, lead the league in pace. And he's mentioned maybe slowing down just a touch. And I think despite the fact that the offense maybe wasn't at an A level on Monday night, maybe they kind of found that happy medium from a pace standpoint.
I think they were so focused on pushing the pace that some of the defensive principles, the coaches didn't overlook them, but maybe some of the players – especially maybe like Jeff Teague and Monte Ellis, if they're just constantly thinking about pushing the tempo and getting a quick shot up, they forget that in order to get good quick shots, a lot of times it comes from creating turnovers and playing really good defense. I think that pace is something that they can play the pace well once they're in better condition. If you're not used to doing that, running up and down, naturally you just slow down. And Dan Burke said something yesterday in the shoot-around that I shared on the television broadcast when he was going through a defensive session preparing for the game. He said, "We've got a lot of offensive-minded guys right now. We've got no problem on the offensive end. We need guys that can guard. And it's just constantly hammering home the principles that he's trying to teach to them and the importance of good defense. And that could be, more than anything else, a performance like Monday night where you only score 88 points and have a convincing victory could be the push to everyone. Like, yeah, we need to play better defense. And if we do, this is going to be a lot more fun and we can push the tempo as well. So all in all, a really good performance, but it is just one game. No need to overreact. And I think some fans even on Twitter I saw were like, yeah, it's just the Magic, you know, and they were on the second half of the back-to-back.
Right.
You need a little bit of perspective. The record is 5-6. They are 5-1 at home, but the schedule over the next week and a half will be really interesting and I think really entertaining because the Pacers haven't played the elite teams in the NBA with the exception of maybe you could say Charlotte. Maybe they're one of the best teams in the East. But this is an opportunity coming up where the best of the best will be coming to Baker's Life Fieldhouse.
One thing I wanted to touch upon before we leave Magic is Kevin Serafin. And it's not often that, you know, when we, after the game ends, we kind of discuss who you want for the TV post-game interview. Then I'll pick from the list of the remaining players. And usually when that happens, there's like three guys that I want. And it was so odd because a guy who scored 6 points was the hands down, I thought, correct decision for that post-game interview. But he really provided a spark. They started winning some of those 50-50 balls, which had been a little bit of a problem. And so your thoughts, A, on Serafin, and B, one of the things we like to do on this podcast is kind of share some of the moments that are behind the scenes that we can share that you maybe don't see on camera or don't hear on radio. First of all, for those who didn't see his interview with Serafin, there was an intruder. I think I counted three times, LaVoy Allen jumping in front of the camera. First, I'd like to hear your thoughts on Serafin, but please end this with you jokingly called LaVoy out for that today at practice, and LaVoy had an answer for you that was a little suspect, if you ask me.
Yeah, exactly. Well, LaVoy suspect in general, but that's another – that we could probably do a whole podcast cast on that. So during the third quarter – occasionally, our producer, Max Leinwand, not really in the third quarter, mostly in the fourth quarter if it's double digits, we'll start having a discussion of who we would like to request for the post-game interview. Usually the halftime interview, if the Pacers are tied or have the lead, is whoever David Benner says I should interview. I could give a recommendation, but at that point, usually it's just, who do you want us to talk to? Paul and Jeff have asked, and that's perfectly fine that they not do the halftime interviews. They're fine with the postgame interviews. So if you take those guys off the list and you look who's maybe close to double figures, who's made a big impact, we got C.J. Miles at halftime. I'll never turn down a C.J. Miles opportunity. So that was that. Midway through the fourth quarter, Max Leinwand says, you know, I wouldn't mind a Kevin Serafin interview. And I'm like, that is exactly what I was thinking. Mm-hmm. Then that was a conversation between just Max and myself. Two or three minutes later, Chris Denary and Quinn Buckner on the air have the conversation like they are coming up with some brilliant idea. You know what? I think Kevin Serafin's the player of the game. JJ, you ought to get him for the interview. And I wanted to have my microphone open right then and say, we've already talked about that, Chris, but thanks for your input. And then it became every time I thought maybe Chris would jinx it a little bit because I think at that point he had maybe 6 points and 5 rebounds. And I was like, if he gets close to double-double territory for sure. But then I walked down, he made a few more plays, and it was a no-brainer. No one else had 20 points or anything like that. Yep, we'd like Kevin Serafin. And I just looked at David Benner, and I just gave him the number one, and he just gave a nod, and you asked, and that's who we decided to interview. So it was great. I was looking forward to the opportunity to talk to him. But before the interview, then Chris Denary says, well, Jeremiah's going to have to learn some French because I think the interview needs to be Kevin Serafin. At that point, I didn't take any French in college. I did take German in high school and Spanish in college, but I don't know either one very well. And bonjour is about the extent of my French. So I came up, our friend Mr. Google allowed me to determine what good game is in French. And so I was able to put that in at the end of the interview, grand jour. And then he spoke back to me in French. And, of course, I didn't know what to say. So I was exposed a little bit at that point. To start the interview, it's fun when there's some hijinks. Guys, after a win, maybe sometimes they'll get behind, the bunny ears, or maybe they shove somebody. But LaVoy Allen just walked right in front of us as we started the interview. Then he turned right back around and walked back. And then he walked back again. All right, well, LaVoy, are you trying to get in this guy? This is Kevin Serafin's stage. This is his spotlight. This is his welcome to Indianapolis moment. And what do we have but LaVoy Allen just trying to ruin
it. Which, by the way, if you asked any player that you thought it might be, LaVoy is obviously near the top of that list. Lavoie's hijinks central, but you at practice, you asked him about it, and he said...
So he said I was in his way.
Three times.
The closest distance between 2 points is a straight line. Well, if that's actually the case, then he didn't go the closest distance because he kind of zigzagged.
Yeah.
He backtracked, he went, and he backtracked again. So I was in his way maybe the first time. Then he was in our way the next 2 times.
I think that's...
And I think he's just jealous that he didn't get the post-game interview. But there are times we've asked to interview Lavoie, and he politely declines. Or actually, impolitely declines. I mean, Lavoie is just a unique character.
Very unique, yes.
Some great stories. Deep down, he's kind of like a little teddy bear, but he's got a little bit of that Philly rough edge that I think he has to put on a little persona, so... We enjoy Lavoie, but you never know what you're going to get from him.
I think that's probably the best way to end that. The starting five was an interesting topic coming into the game. Nate McMillan said if Paul was going to play, they were going to go back to Monte Ellis. I think this surprised a few people just from the aspect of they had gone to C.J. Miles recently, and some thought, you know, it's a reasonable thought. Maybe you try that a little bit longer. McMillan had his reasons for wanting to go back to that first unit. And it was interesting talking to CJ after our television interview in there. I was kind of around him while he was talking to the horde of reporters. If you didn't see our interview with him, it went south in kind of a funny way quickly. And I try not to take too much of that time because I don't want you to have to toss to me and be gone for like 4 minutes. And so we got maybe a question or two less than I typically would have asked CJ, but because he was so blown away by the fact that it had been 2.5 years since they'd given up that low of a point total. And in fact, he had not been here when that happened. So that was the best Pacers defensive effort since CJ Miles had been here as it relates to points allowed. But he made a comment that he feels more comfortable in the second unit. And part of what he was saying was, you know, he will do whatever the team wants him to do. And he played a little bit more when he was in the starting lineup for that one game. But his point was that the team is trying to grow chemistry right now. And he feels that he has chemistry with the second unit and doesn't quite have it with the first unit yet. And I think some people are wondering, you know, why would Nate McMillan, why would he try this for one game and why would he switch it? Well, I think he tried it for one game and I think he realized that. I think he realized this team has chemistry or is still trying to build chemistry right now. That's a major thing they're trying to build. And let's not mess with it, at least at this point, while we're trying to grow some of it. Maybe as the season goes on, if they hit a rough patch, they can try something like that. But they're trying to build consistency. It's been a word you've heard out of Nate's mouth a lot the last week and a half is consistency. And I think he saw the fact that Miles had just kind of started building some chemistry with that second unit. The units were finally starting to build a little chemistry with each other and not wanting to disrupt that. That's my own thought, my own opinion on what might have happened. I obviously don't know exactly why McMillan made the decision to go back to him, but I think it's significant that CJ says he feels he has more comfort with the second unit, and he's been fantastic off the bench this season.
He's been able to play so many different roles in his time with the Pacers, and he's always done it with a smile, and he's always accepted it, but it does seem like he's a little more comfortable coming in off the bench, maybe at times taking advantage of if the starters are still on the floor for the other team, maybe they start to get a little bit tired, or perhaps a second unit, then being ready to go right at the opening tip, especially at a 3 or 2 position when you need to be a big scorer. Last year he had to be the 4, and that was a little different responsibility altogether, but I don't think you could compare when he started at the 4 to starting at the 2 or possibly even the 3. One thing that I do think is part of Nate McMillan's thought process when he went to CJ Miles and then he went back is Rodney Stuckey, because what he really wanted was Monte Ellis to help spark the second unit offensively. Didn't see enough scoring. While he had CJ in there as well, he wanted Monte Ellis maybe to be the creator that he can't be with Jeff Teague on the floor. So it was like maybe to get Monte started, but also to have Monte start the second unit. But I think in the last couple days that Nate has realized and come to the understanding that Rodney Stuckey will be back sooner rather than later. And he can be that ball handler spark that the second unit is needing, so he doesn't need to put Monte there. He said that last night, referenced it. I'm not sure whether it was on the Fox Sports Indiana interview or talking with reporters before or after the game, but there's a really good feeling. Rodney Stuckey went through practice on Tuesday. He ran with the team on Monday at shoot-around. There's no timetable yet, and I know Mark Monteith spoke with Rodney today after practice, which is also a good sign, because if somebody doesn't go through practice, they're usually not available for interviews. Rodney did go through interviews. So this is just a complete guess on my part, but I would say it's a conditioning issue now that he's healthy, and maybe a week from now you're seeing Rodney Stuckey. And then you don't need to worry as much about the second unit because you've got Rodney Stuckey playing heavy minutes. Then the only question becomes, does Aaron Brooks play as much? Because we've seen at times a four-man rotation off the bench, mixing in one of the starters at times with that second unit. We haven't seen all full five at times. So I think that'll be interesting to watch, but I think there's a good feeling that Rodney Stuckey will be able to come back. And we didn't see it as much last year as I would have liked because both were injured at different times. But I want to just see over a two- or three-week period of time Rodney Stuckey and C.J. Miles, both healthy, both coming off the bench, and seeing what they can do for that second unit.
I don't want to go off track here, but you brought up a point that sparked my memory and I wanted to bring up, and I think sometimes fans wonder this, you know, why haven't you talked to Rodney Stuckey within the last 2 weeks? Well, when he doesn't practice, he doesn't have to talk. And that made me think of Saturday night against Boston. The Pacers lose. Paul George doesn't play. He was hurt for that game. And he didn't have to talk. And I think, you know, I really appreciated – I know he's trying to show that he can be that leader now, and that's a role that he's transitioning into. And I don't want to put too much weight on this and pretend like it's some grand change of mind that he's had. But I did appreciate when we got into that locker room on Saturday, Paul George was sitting there. And I will tell you, since I've been here, this is the start of season three, I have never interviewed on one of those post-game locker room interviews for Fox a guy who didn't play, because they're never there. And they don't have to be there. That's not expected. It's totally above and beyond the call to be there and to talk. But I think Paul realized he's the best player on this team. He's a top player in this league. He didn't play. People are going to want to know why that was and going to want to hear from him. And I thought it took a lot of maturity for him to be willing to sit there and talk after a loss, a frustrating loss that he couldn't be a part of, and still, you know, talk about his situation. That took some maturity, and I don't totally know, you know, the back workings of that. I think, you know, David Benner certainly deserves some credit there for helping make that work as well. But when players don't play or don't practice, they have no obligation to talk after the game, after the practice. And I thought it spoke pretty highly of Paul that he was willing to sit in there and do that interview. Before we look forward, I want to take a look at the NBA here in a moment. But it's one of the things about coming to the arena this year is it's almost like if you just randomly throw darts at a few games you're going to go to, like you're going to catch more special nights than you would not special nights. It's a really cool year to be a fan, regardless of the product on the court, which I know we both think will be good once everything kind of comes together. But with the Decade Nights, with the Hickory Nights, there's a lot of this going on. Your thoughts on 60s Night, though? I know a tough game. Paul didn't play. Boston didn't have Horford. I talked my dad into coming into that game. And don't get me wrong, I'm not going to apologize for him coming to a Pacers game. But you know, Horford's going to be in Boston. You know, you'll get to see, you know, Paul and this new look team, and it's going to be 60s night, and you're going to get a bobblehead and all that, which the event was still fantastic, but a little disappointing from just circumstances. But 60s night, your initial thoughts of the first of these decade games that the Pacers are going to unveil, which is one decade a month all the way through the 2010s decade in April.
I just like the smiles and enthusiasm from the former players. We had a chance to have a few of them on the pregame show. Chris Denary had a great conversation just going down memory lane. And when you do some interviews like that, you almost feel like you should devote a whole show to them. Or maybe those are the nights we could do an hour show easily and just have it be a conversation, not necessarily something where you're producing all these highlights. Just let these guys talk, because they have so many great stories to tell. And they were so excited to be there. And you can tell what a bond some of these teammates they had with each other. And I think you obviously will have that a little more with the 60s and 70s guys, the ones that won championships, and maybe some of them work together a little bit longer than in the current NBA, where the rosters turn over so much. If you ask me 50 years from now, will we see the guys from 2015 and 16 back together and chumming it up? Maybe. But it's a little bit different. And those guys have stayed close for so long because of the success that they had. So I enjoyed seeing them. Freddie Lewis was able to talk to at halftime, and he was great to talk to. And think about all these guys have done since they played for the Pacers, and their memories are so sharp, and they have such great stories to tell. And I thought the Roger Brown bobblehead was really nice. I mean, I'm a bobblehead fan, and I think that there are times in the past the Pacers have had giveaways, but there is a limited quantity. And I think it's really cool that with all the decade nights that we are having this year, everyone in attendance gets a bobblehead. So you come to the building, you don't have to camp out 5 hours before, hope you're one of the first 2,000 people in. Everyone gets a bobblehead. Everyone gets a little piece of the Pacers history. And the arena, right before tip-off, a 60s-themed intro, I thought it was really cool as well. Yeah, as you mentioned, the only thing that didn't really go according to plan was the game. And it was close. It just it just wasn't the Pacers' best performance. And I enjoyed seeing Brad Stevens as well. He's kind of a great person, and I love having those guys in the building. And so it was the good launch to the decades. You had a little taste of it on season opening night. The next will be the 70s, and I think that'll be fun as well.
Certainly the case. And also this Friday is going to be a Hickory night. We'll get more into that. We're going to look later in this show in the next 5 or 10 minutes or so. We're still kind of winding down here. But Cavs and Suns, we'll kind of break down those two opponents, and we'll talk about more about Hickory night and what will be involved with that Suns game on Friday. Let's take a look at the NBA, though, as a whole. And finally, we're kind of to the point where I like looking at numbers and trends and things like that, but I'm always so careful to tell myself small sample size, small sample size, small sample size. We're 10-plus games in. Small sample size land is still not totally gone. But finally, you have some things that I think you can cling on to as it relates to the NBA, the Pacers as a whole. There's starting to be some trends that I think you can at least look at. So for our pick three, which is our segment we do every podcast, a different topic each week, this week, let's do 10-plus games in, your most surprising teams in the NBA so far. I'll have you pick one, I'll pick one, and then I think we've come to a consensus on one. But through 10-plus games, the Pacers are at 11, some are at 10, maybe even a couple at 12. The Mavs are at 9, I guess. But regardless, your most surprising team, positive, negative, or other reason right now is?
I'm going to go with the Houston Rockets. There was a lot of buzz before the season about James Harden, and I'll be honest, I didn't really buy in. Their major acquisitions were guys that didn't really fit with the Pelicans, Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson. They were injury prone. They have a new coach that I felt like Mike D'Antoni, his style worked with just exactly the right personnel, but if he didn't have that personnel, then maybe it wouldn't work. And they started the season, I was as surprised as the schedule as anything else, of their first 8 games, 7 of them were on the road. A couple games ago, the Pacers were one of 3 undefeated teams at home. The Pacers, the Pistons were, I think, each 5-0 or 4-0, maybe 6-0 Detroit. And Houston was 1-0. So if they even count in that category, but then that was impressive to me is that they were 1-0 at home. But then I think they were 5-2 on the road. And right now their current record is 6-4. You could say, well, that's not a great record. It's one game, a couple games over 500. But I personally didn't think Houston would be a playoff team because I didn't think if they didn't make the playoffs last year and you didn't make yourself better, how are you going to be better this year in the Western Conference? It looks like that they mean business, that they're a top 8 team in the West. I'll say surprising team, the Houston Rockets.
My surprise, I'm going to take the pessimistic view, and I'm going to go Mavericks. They see at some point this is going to happen, and I'm not saying that still they're 2-7, 9 games in, ton of basketball to be played. We keep reiterating that with the Pacers, so we shouldn't be unfair and not count that fact in for other teams. But the Mavs are 2-7 to open the season, and that's surprising to me. You know, at some point this team, which has done a fantastic job year in and year out, I think, of moving pieces in and remaining competitive despite the fact that their best player is getting significantly older. And I thought they did a good job of that again this year. They brought in Harrison Barnes. They brought in Andrew Bogut. It may still very well work. You might find him in the playoffs. I thought this was a 5-7, maybe 8-spot playoff team. But if you asked me to pick the Western Conference playoffs, I had the Mavs in there somewhere. I think they're really, really well-rounded. I thought they were a beneficiary of Durant going to Oakland because they got Bogut and they got Barnes when Golden State could no longer get them. And, you know, Dirk, now in fairness, Dirk has been hurt, I think, 3 or 4 of these 9 games and has not played. So that's certainly significant. And it's a veteran team. They've got time to figure it out. But I look at the roster. I see you've got Dirk on there. You've got Wes Matthews. You've got Harrison Barnes. You've got Andrew Bogut. There is some depth there. We saw him here opening night. Maybe not their best performance, but
you have continuity. Rick Carlisle.
Sure.
You know what you're doing with that team.
Sure. So I'm surprised they're 2-7. I expect them to pick it up. But at some point, the Mavs are going to have some sort of rebuild or soft reset. They kind of remind me of maybe the Pacers a few years ago as they started to wind down and it was clear. Now, obviously, Larry Bird and company did a great job of not needing to rebuild. It was a very quick turnaround. But they also had Paul George and a young Paul George, and that's what the Mavs don't have. So at some point, that's going to happen. Maybe it's this year. I didn't expect it to be this year. Our third team, I think I've kind of picked this for us, but the Clippers at 10-1 have been a pleasant surprise because there's always a lot going on. It's in L.A. There's, you know, Chris Paul says this, Blake Griffin does that and gets suspended. DeAndre Jordan is going to this team. He's not going. It seems like there's a lot of drama, might be too strong, but there's just constant talk, it seems like, coming from over there, and they're clearly talented. So far, they've had a good but not great run, and you could argue that it's not lived up to standards. And I kind of feel like the Clippers are at a point where a lot of those guys will still have productive careers after this year. I'm not trying to say that they won't. But Chris Paul, DeAndre Jordan, Blake Griffin, J.J. Redick, that unit, throwing Crawford with some of that, has kind of had a run here where it kind of feels like they're closer to the end of that run than the beginning. I think it's sort of hitting them that This is a huge, huge year for them, and they're 10-1. And if you're a Clippers fan, I think you have to be thrilled because they're playing defense also better than they have. So at 10-1, the Clippers have surprised me.
And a little bit of a plug, you think about the home games in November and the ones that we discussed even on the last podcast of ones we were looking forward to. You referenced the Cavs, of course the Warriors, the Celtics. But the Clippers are also paying a visit to Bankers Life Fieldhouse Thanksgiving weekend, Sunday, November 27th. There's a very good chance that coming into that game, they'll have the best record in the NBA. So it's a fun month of November, but a challenging one. And looking at the Pacers' schedule, I just really look forward to seeing where they can be at the end of the month with the home games, but knowing that these are some really, really good teams, and if they can build on that performance against Orlando. Good call on the Clippers. I still am not so sure that when all is said and done, they will hold on to that top spot in the West. But I like
the West is too good, but they
I like
only
that someone
themselves.
Will challenge the Warriors
yeah.
and make them want to still, you know, try to win games. Maybe Golden State will take an approach that we've seen from some LeBron teams where they didn't need the number one seed or didn't care about that. But I like it when there are teams until the last week of the season fighting for positioning, trying to win games, not where there is 6 or 7 games separating. So there really is nothing to play for. So I think it's good for the league and good for the Western Conference to see those guys keep pace with each other.
Yeah, certainly. The Warriors are the heavy favorite, but if the Clippers are going to do this and play well the whole year, and you can't discount a team that has, you could make a case Kawhi Leonard is the third best player in the league and is coached by Greg Popovich. You can never forget about the Spurs. So, yeah, the Warriors are really good, but the Western Conference, as it's been lately, is top-heavy. And those, I think, just kind of riding off the Western Conference and just saying it's going to be Cleveland and Golden State again, maybe it will be. But I think there's a lot of other good teams in there that could certainly challenge and potentially beat them. A non-pick three shout-out to the Lakers. They're 6-5. They've beaten Golden State and the Hawks. And some people said around here, and it might still be true, that was a bad Lakers team that came in here and the Pacers beat. So far, that's not been true. The Lakers are over 500. They have a few really good wins, and that might end up being a better win than we realize. One win that we know would be extremely good if the Pacers could get is Wednesday. Cavs come to town, champs come to town, and the Pacers are coming off some momentum, which I think was sorely needed heading into this game.
A lot of momentum, a return to the defensive principles and defensive success that this team so often relies on, and a game that they'll be up for. There's no doubt some of the games in the first 2 or 3 weeks of the season, human nature set in, maybe there was a letdown.
even though you play the 76ers in overtime and win and you have to play them again, they should have your full attention, it's still the 76ers. When LeBron James comes to town, it is a really big deal. The field house will be sold out. There might be a few LeBron jerseys in the crowd. So be it. It's one of the fun nights to be a fan. It's one of the enjoyable nights to be a broadcaster. It's just great to be alive. And I cannot wait for Wednesday night. And I hope Paul George is 100%. Looked like he was a little bit better at practice on Tuesday. He was not 100%, but played against the Magic and contributed. I think he'll be maybe going a little adrenaline boost to help him out on Wednesday.
Yeah, he talked about his cutting ability being a little bit reduced. He's going to need that to guard LeBron James. But it's the first time this new-look Pacers team gets a real big-name opponent in the building. I'll be really interested to see the performance the Pacers come out with. As you mentioned, they should have momentum. They should be up for it. The Cavs are really good, and that's an understatement of the century. They've got the best player in the league. They've got a ton of talent around them. They're the defending champs. But the Pacers have competed with LeBron James teams here since LeBron moved to Miami, I would say. And so I think there's no reason to believe the Pacers can't compete and potentially have a chance to win at the end if they play a brand of basketball where we don't see the defense. I mean, that's the whole thing here. Were there defensive strides? And I don't care about the back-to-back or the fact that Orlando is probably going to be a poor offensive team this year. You hold someone to 69, I don't care about the intangibles. Okay, maybe that wasn't a team at their full strength, but you hold anybody to 69, you've played good defense. That's one game, though. That's the reality. It was a really good game, but it is just one game. And the little momentum they've had to build upon this year, they haven't been able to carry it. That win against Chicago that they had on Saturday, and I think it was it the Charlotte game that followed the Chicago win, where things, you know, came unglued in that first quarter and they gave up 43 points. Okay, you've given yourself some momentum again. You played really, really well on Monday night. But it's time to carry that over. It's time for momentum to be more than one game. And I'm not saying they have to win. You know, there are scenarios, I think, you never like to say, you know, a loss is a good loss or anything like that. But there's a way the Pacers could come out and play on Wednesday night and still lose, and I think that you could take a lot of positives from it. And we'll see. I think there might be a couple tickets available, Pacers.com/tickets. If not, the only verified resale market is on Pacers.com/ticket, and there's a little slider up there that you can switch over and look at verified resale tickets if you want to be here. Any final thoughts on Cavs before we move to Suns?
Nope. Looking forward to it. Pacers live pregame at 6:30, yep, and I know you're on the radio
tip
as well.
7 o'clock tip against the Cavs. Pregame shows, radio, TV, starting at 6:30. Suns. Every time I say Suns in this building, it seems like it's a kind of a scary game because they, in the past, have played such a different style. You don't see them very often. The Pacers got the better of Phoenix last year. Phoenix was terrible last year. But in the past, this is a team that's given Indiana some trouble. I remember 2 years ago they came in here and won big early in the season. They beat that team that went to the Eastern Conference Finals here at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. The personnel has changed. They're better than last year, I think. But that's a team that right now they're leading the league in pace, and like it's not even close. They are at Suns' pace, but even higher than what you'd normally think of at Suns' pace. And while they might be a little bit undermanned in terms of are they going to make the playoffs, when a different team comes in that you don't see very often and your own team is still trying to find chemistry, find identity, that is a trap game's not the right word, but it's a scary, it's a dangerous opponent here on Friday night. And the Pacers need to, you know, start taking care of these games where they are clearly overmanned, or where they have their opponent clearly overmanned. And that's what I'll be looking forward to see on Friday. They did that. They outmanned Orlando on Monday night. On Friday night, it's a hickory night. Can they do that against Phoenix?
I think so. I think it's a good opportunity for the Pacers to push the tempo, but also get back and play some defense, see some of the young stars for the Suns. I think they're a team that's going to be interesting to watch on the trade scenarios because they've got some guards, some good pieces. They've got some young pieces as well. I don't think they want to go into a full, long rebuild. They want to get back better, and to do that, they're going to have to give up some of their talented youngsters and maybe try to get somebody that's a veteran that may be disgruntled where they currently are playing. So it's early to be talking trades, but I know there were some interesting rumors floating around Twitter yesterday, and that's a team that I could see their roster looking different
in February or March than it does right now. But you have to give a lot of respect to Devin Booker. I mean, one of the star up-and-coming players in the NBA. And I see Leandro Barbosa back in Phoenix and what he did for Golden State. Now he's back, and it's always good to see him. So I'm looking forward to that game. I'm just looking forward to the week and then a trip to OKC on Saturday for that game on Sunday.
Yeah, if you're a casual fan, you talk about young players that are you need to see in this league. Certainly Turner gets that here. I don't know if he does nationally. But Devin Booker, because he's kind of hidden in Phoenix on a bad team and wasn't an early draft pick, he was a first-round pick, mid-first-round, a few picks after the Pacers. He's really, really impressive-looking. I think if you redraft, still too early to do that, but Booker is a top-five kind of guy. He looks really impressive, a good reason to come out, watch two of the games, young stars, Miles Turner, and Devin Booker will take the floor. They went a handful of picks apart from each other in the draft. And they will be on the floor Friday. It's a Hickory night, Pacers.com/tickets. There are good ones available for that one. And if you can't be there, 7 o'clock is the tip, 6:30 Kroger pregame show on the radio. That's 93.5 FM, 1070 in Indianapolis, and on Fox Sports Indiana. Television, as always, with Jeremiah Johnson at 6:30 on FSI. That should about wrap it up for this. I think you're going to cover Monte Ellis giving out turkeys.
So. Yes, looking forward to seeing Monte and his foundation spread a little holiday love, turkey giveaway, and I know it's a busy week for the guys getting out in the community. Shout out to the Pacers Community Relations Department, Pacers Cares, and all of the guys in their individual foundations as well. These guys are good players, but they're good community guys as well, so we're going to go gobble, gobble with Monte.
And then on Thursday, Rodney Stuckey has the Come to Our House dinner that the Pacers have hosted, and it's Stuckey the last couple of years where the less fortunate can come and get a great meal at Bankers Life Fieldhouse on Thursday. Then on Saturday, Pacers Weekly, you'll hear Jeremiah Johnson on that as well. It's every 10 to 11 a.m. We podcast those as well as this, so a couple of good shows that we certainly hope that you will tune in for, subscribe, download, whatever it takes, and get those in your weekly playlist. But Jeremiah's got to go cover Montella's, got to go cover turkeys. So we will wrap this one up, and we will see you next week on the Sideline Guys podcast.